At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the DDGO Politics podcast. I am your co-host with Chris Hilali. I am here today. I have got my Lavrov sweater on, so to enrage everyone from the Alaska Summit, you know, from our friends in Russia. Chris, how is Russia? How is Moscow?
Everything's good here. Weather's beautiful. Things are good. We're continuing to advance on the battlefield. So things are good.
I guess we are. And we're going to get started kind of quickly here, guys. So I apologize because we do have a hard stop. Chris has somewhere to be at to my time. But I really quickly before we start, we've been talking about this book a lot on various live streams and faces. I really want to recommend it. It is The End Times by Peter Turchin. Not end times in an eschatological way, end times in an economic and societal cultural way. So highly, highly recommend that book right now. It's very recent. And we've been talking about the concepts in it for the last couple weeks, I think, especially with Jamarl. So we're going to get started. There's a plethora of media assets that I'm going to try to keep. Anyway, we have drones. Let's get through the Russia-Ukraine update. We have drones all over the place. Drones in Poland, drones in Romania, drones, everybody gets a drone. And then we have, obviously, Radek. Thank you for U.S. blowing up Nord Stream. Sikorsky said, NATO is not at war with Russia, but Russia is at war with NATO through Ukraine. How does that work? How do you get to be at war with somebody that's not in war at war with you?
That's some real splicing of hair there. That's for sure.
But so Reuters reported that same day, Poland will receive 43.7 billion under the EU's new Security Action for Europe defense loan scheme, its largest allocation to date, aimed at bolstering military capabilities in light of Russian aggression. Also on the 12th, so 2 days ago, NATO announced Operation Eastern Sentry to reinforce its positions on the eastern flank. What do you think about this buildup in the Eastern Bloc, the former Warsaw Pact states?
I mean, this buildup is exactly what the whole special military operation was started to prevent, this massive buildup and escalation. And of course, this is a very convenient thing to happen at this point. That all of a sudden, all of these drones, by the way, which were not armed, none of these drones had explosive material on them. And in fact, now there are some stories coming out. Maybe they're not from there. Maybe they were from inside Ukraine. We don't really know what's going on. If you can clearly see, this is not the product of the Russian defense industry. No, it really isn't.
That they go, they were talking about them, and we know what kind of drones they are. They're obviously decoy drones to open up air defense systems. But of course, the American media was like, Iranian made attack drones are flying through the skies of Poland. I was like, why is Iran making their decoy drones now? It's just incredible.
It's incredible. But listen to this. I mean, the fact that this has now happened, Poland invoked Article 4. And basically had high-level consultations with other NATO members and countries. And of course, then you have this announcement of increased funding, increased maneuvers, increased troop deployments, increased aerial assets in the region. I mean, it's the perfect situation to increase and further escalate the situation against the Russian Federation. So at this point, Russia's already winning the war in Ukraine. Why would they need to escalate it further than that? I think that this could seriously be a false flag incident. That's my, you know, deepest, darkest perspective here.
The multiple sources have come out and said that the drones were actually under Ukrainian control due to electronic warfare. I used to work in electronic warfare, and that is highly possible. Trump also said could be a mistake. So he also knows, I think. But at this, on the same token, this came out yesterday. I don't know if we have the tweet. Yeah, here we go. A letter said, but I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he is basically saying that all NATO nations need to stop buying oil from Russia. The NATO's commitment to win has been far less than 100%, and the purchase of Russian oil by some has been shocking. He wants NATO needs to place 50 to 100% tariffs on China to be fully withdrawn after the war to end this ridiculous war. What do you think about this huge act of desperation?
Well, it's not only an act of desperation. I mean, think about it like this. Trump went on Fox and Friends and basically said, I'm not happy with Putin. We had a good working relationship. Now, not so much. And I'm ready to do things if the other European countries are willing to do them. Basically, they're preparing the groundwork for increased sanctions, increased secondary sanctions, tariffs, and the possibility of further aid to the NATO countries in the form of selling arms and ammunition, which will go and fuel this ongoing conflict. And that's what they want. That's exact. It's playing into the handbook of exactly the types of Lindsey Graham, Sidney Blumenthal, and the rest of the gang.
Yeah, we're going to quickly segue. Maybe it's not the best transition, but we'll segue over to Venezuela. So on 9/11, a lot of things happened on 9/11. On 9/11, during a Pentagon briefing to congressional staff, U.S. officials failed to provide any proof that the boat destroyed in last week's drone strike in the Caribbean belonged to Venezuela or that its crew were members of the Tren de Aragua gang. Senator Jack Reed, the senior Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee, confirmed after the briefing that the Pentagon had offered no positive identification on the vessel, its crew, or any cartel links. Officials also admitted that they could not determine the boat's destination. While Trump insisted it was headed towards the United States, Secretary of State and Gusano in charge, Marco Rubio, later conceded the drugs were likely bound for Trinidad or elsewhere in the Caribbean. What the fuck?
This is an extrajudicial killing on the high seas. And it's a violation of all of the laws, norms, and rules of engagement. So the fact that they came out originally and said, we've identified the personnel, we identified the cargo, this is a positive target, we're going to take a military action. And then to come out afterwards, the Pentagon says, oh, sorry, we actually don't know who was on the boat. We don't know where the boat was heading. And we don't know that the boat was actually carrying drugs. If this was murder, it's exactly what President Nicolas Maduro and the government in Venezuela have been saying. This was a murder that the U.S. needs to be held accountable for. And of course, they're going to say, oh, no, you know, it was either mistaken identity or no, we're going to still go along with the same story. But no one's going to hold them accountable because our international institutions have utterly failed at this point.
Yeah, there were even some reports after the fact that said the ship was turned around because it noticed the United States following them. And so they turned around. Whether or not that's indicative of guilt, it doesn't matter. It means that they were retreating away and you're not, the rules of engagement dictate that you don't shoot someone in the back, literally.
Right, right. Exactly right.
Also, I mean, this just keeps, and this is all happening while we get to our last segment, which is what's overshadowing everything else. But this is also happening while the United States Navy boards a Venezuelan vessel. An Arleigh Burke-class destroyer, the crew It was from the USS Dunham. They boarded a Venezuelan fishing boat in Venezuelan waters.
Another violation of the territorial integrity and sovereignty of a nation. This is something absolutely in violation of international norms and standards of international law. And you clearly see the U.S. at this point is engaged in piracy. It has always done so. It continues to do so. It is engaged in overt and blatant piracy and military actions against a country that it has not declared war against, that has done nothing to, you know, to warrant this kind of response and this escalation. And that's the real danger here, is that right now the United States is setting the stage for a scenario where something could go wrong, something, an accident could happen, somebody could shoot, and then they're going to claim, like a Gulf of Tonkin incident, this happened. And we're back in square one with the ground war, an air war, and a sea war in our hemisphere once more.
And what do you think? I mean, we've constantly talked about Venezuela's oil reserves on the backing of, we just talked about this story where United States wants everyone to stop buying Russian oil, and now this attack on Venezuela. How do you see the two kind of being related?
I mean, they're totally related. I mean, like we said, Venezuela has the largest petroleum reserves in the world, and it's sitting, it's basically a gigantic bank just sitting there waiting to be plundered. I mean, it's just wide open. So a lot of the oil companies, the big oil companies and oil monopolies, really want to get in there. That was the whole Chevron debacle. Yep. And of course, Venezuela's closer relationships and deepening ties with Russia and with China, of course, bring fear to the United States, because it's in its hemisphere. You know, they still have the Monroe Doctrine and these visions of, you know, nobody can touch this hemisphere but them. So that's a real cause for concern. So they're setting up the stage by claiming that Maduro and the Venezuelan government are somehow narco traffickers and narco terrorists and somehow a narco state, that they could do a decapitation strike. They could claim that it was justified because of the drug epidemic, which, by the way, is caused by the demand for and the consumption, right? The demand of the consumers in the U.S. is driving the drug industry. And of course, we know the big drug dealers, DEA, CIA, the whole gang of them, they can't cross the border without, I mean, it's one of the most secure borders in the world. And somehow nobody knows where these drugs are coming in. Please, everybody's got a piece of the action. And it's right. Coming straight from Washington. Everybody knows that in Latin America, too.
Exactly that. And even this week, Gloria Sheinbaum was declared persona non grata in Peru for saying that, you know, for sticking up for Pedro. What's his last name? Is it Castro?
From Peru.
Yes.
Castillo.
Thank you. And I'm making a note of that because Pedro Castillo was an indigenous democratically elected official that was overthrown by the United States government. And now Peru was once again the second top exporter of drugs to the United States. Isn't that strange how that works?
Very interesting. I think we got to ask some questions.
So on the same topic late yesterday, F-35s from the 3rd Air Wing have arrived at Roosevelt Roads Naval Air Base in Puerto Rico to support operations against drug cartels in the Caribbean. Do we need F-35s for drug cartels now? How advanced are these things?
I don't know. But, you know, before they were just using Contras and using whoever else they could find and whatever other gangs and militias and drug dealers that they could put on their side. And of course, the U.S. has never actively been. The U.S.'s drug war was a farce. It was a war against left-wing and progressive forces in Latin America under the guise of a drug war. And it was a war on black and brown people in the U.S. and on poor people in the U.S., including many poor whites, to further the class war in the U.S. So that's really the drug war. The drug war is a rich man's war to further the imperial goals and ambitions of the United States. So the F-35s now being deployed to Puerto Rico, this is saber rattling at its best. This is to show. And by the way, the F-35, once again, think of it this way. The F-35s flying over, you know, Putin with the B-2 when they came over, right? All this kind of stuff, having them out there. This is all sort of the big dick competition. You know, I'm more macho, I'm ready to go. But I'll tell you one thing. Maduro has the most power here, because if the United States strikes Venezuela, just as the United States has struck other countries, they're going to lose, because the Venezuelan people have a proud revolutionary tradition from Simon Bolivar onwards, and not to mention indigenous resistance and Afro-Caribbean resistance. So it's just a reality that, yes, the numbers could be skewed, but the United States is going to lose. They're going to lose big time. And if you've seen how they've been marching in their recent parades, they're going to be going back in caskets for sure.
We almost always lose against nationalist guerrilla
for sure.
People think this would be any different. Also, coming on the heels of the F-35s and the boarding, New York Times is calling it the new war in Latin America. At least somebody's telling the truth about what's going on. I just wanted to point this out. I mean, the article kind of just recaps everything that we said, but I love this framing of the new war in Latin America. Finally, someone telling the quiet part out loud.
Absolutely. And we have to know that Marco Rubio and many others in Congress are beholden.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Holding to the Miami elite and things like that who want to see regime change, especially who want to see the downfall of the progressive governments in Latin America, namely what John Bolton called the Troika of Tyranny, Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua. And by seeing those countries fall and trying to destroy whatever is the remnant of socialism in the 21st century, the pink tide, all this stuff, by doing that, they reassert American hegemony and dominance. And powerful players involved in this project are also Javier Milei in Argentina and others who are not only close to the United States, very close to the Zionist entity. Not only that, I mean, Javier Milei converted to Judaism, you know, and is now openly praised and been how many times to pray at that Roman wall. But it's very fascinating at this point, what's going on and what's transpiring. The U.S. is once again in a position where they would like to see Pinochet 2.0 in multiple Latin American countries.
Yes.
They really want that. That's where they're headed.
And if anybody doesn't know who Pinochet is, we wrote a post about it, but the original September 11th, which I always like to talk about because I find it, I don't want to say poetic, because I don't condone what happened on our September 11th, but it's just incredible that in 1973, on September 11th, we overthrew a government resulting in a fascist dictatorship taking over and 3,000 people dying, and then 60,000 people either affected, kidnapped, displaced, whatever. And then, you know, on our own September 11th, we lose our own 3,000 people. It just kind of goes to this constant theme that, you know, foreign policy becomes domestic policy and things always come back. They always come back tenfold.
Absolutely.
Speaking of this crazy administration, and just so you know, Maduro did say that the Trump administration is, I don't know if he said Miami-ized or Miami-fied. He said one or the other. He was like, Miami has taken over the Trump administration with Cruz and Rubio. So, I mean, we've got the Gusano crew in there, Gusano gang in there. So now we're going to segue to a more serious topic. And I want to stress that we do not condone the shooting of Charlie Kirk, nor do we celebrate it, nor do we believe that he deserved to die. Please keep that in mind while we're discussing the aftermath of what happened. So that's what we're discussing. Let's start with Kash Patel to get him out of the way. This freaking dolt, I just can't. Wrong one. This, where is he? There he is.
Lastly, to my friend Charlie Kirk, rest now, brother. We have the watch, and I'll see you in Valhalla.
Kash Patel has announced the killer was in custody when they weren't. Two people were questioned and then released. The FBI waited before releasing images of the actual suspect, which lost critical time. Patel dismissed experienced senior agents. Please keep in mind that 3 weeks ago, Kash Patel dismissed the most experienced investigator of counterterrorism and domestic terrorism in Utah at the FBI station. So she's gone after 27 years of experience. Some of them have even filed lawsuits against him. The FBI kept the rifle used in Kirk's killing for an extended period and sent them moving quickly with forensic analysis and disclosure. Patel has shifted FBI resources towards street crime and immigration enforcement linked to President Trump's agenda, reducing focus on counterintelligence and corruption cases. Former officials point to declining morale inside the FBI and concerns about public credibility. He is scheduled to appear before Congress to answer questions about the Kirk investigation.
Valhalla. Interesting, coming from an Indian. I mean, maybe there's some neo-Aryanism here, you know, sort of, you know, trying to make the great link and the great leap Indo-Iranian to Germanic Nordic. I mean, this is wild. But I mean, ultimately, what it shows is not only, I think the comment can be read in a few ways, but one way I think that's interesting behind, you know, besides the internet LARP and, you know, sort of this neo-paganism and, you know, this kind of fascination with European culture, which has actually emerged in some left-wing circles in the past decade to move them towards right-wing circles. Like, okay, Black Lives Matter, well, our lives should matter as well. And therefore, you know, white people should, you know, go and go back to, like, you know, Thor and all of our gods and runes and things like that. By the way, it's not me. I'm just using we as, yeah. In any case, I'm from a different part of the world. But, in any case, one thing that I think that's important is that this overt sort of culture, this military culture that's kind of seeping its way into the police, into just overall like influencer culture and things like that. Everybody wants to be part of the military or sees themselves as part of some sort of like military force. This kind of militarism, I think, is very dangerous, of course. It's always sort of a precursor to fascistic movements as well. And I think that's something that we have to beware of and be cognizant of. Also, I mean, it's just creepy to speak about Valhalla in that way, especially at this moment. I mean, Charlie Kirk is, you know, was a Christian, very professed and things. He could have just said, I'll see you in heaven or something. But, you know, somebody's thinking about, leaving the karmic cycle. Other ones thinking about heaven. And then we just pick Valhalla. I don't know. It's crazy.
And you know, I want to talk about a little bit about the reporting and because it obviously coincides with the FBI's just mismanaged investigation. But the reporting from the You Are the Media Now people has been insane. Insane. So we started off with he was a disabled veteran. That was the first story. And then it went I don't know if we have it, but Bibi came and suggested that he was part of an Islamic Marxist contingent. And then we had this one is the one, the most important, I think, is when this one came out. Brooks Singman, Charlie Kirk assassin, lived with his transgender partner. Sources tell me. The individual who was a male transitioning to a female is fully cooperating with the FBI. Sources tell me the FBI had text, blah, 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 blah. Sources. Brooke is a very close friend of the Trump administration. What are her credentials? She's a junior digital reporter, so nothing more than a lesser streamer. And here she is with her, I guess it's her husband, boyfriend, who is an APAC recipient to the tune of $250,000. That's the narrative that we're currently going with. To this now, we're fully immersed in the not the killer, the killer's roommate is transgender, transitioning to woman. They have no proof of that. They have yes, I am a lesser streamer, of course. I'm pretty much on the same plateau as the Fox Digital junior digital reporter. Maybe even higher. At least I have a press pass. Anyway, and so we have no proof that he's transitioning. We have no proof that they lived together. The family says he lived at home. The grandma says he lived at home. It's just insane. The amount of like, and it's all just to fit a certain sort of, and we're going to get to the more of the aftermath about what keeps going on. But the reporting on this has been a complete mind fuck.
Can I also say that it's so wild to me that the right wing, when it's convenient, will say, oh, Israel is a bastion of LGBTQ freedom in the Middle East. And, oh, you can be proud to be gay there. And they are, you know, they put pictures, the IDF puts gays getting married in the right now in Gaza and things like that. And, oh, the heroes and the stories. And then, of course, you flip the narrative to say somehow all trans people are left-wing Islamo-Marxists. And I'm like, that's clearly not true, obviously.
People act like they don't have trans and gay people in their party. Last I checked, Scott Pressler was your number one voting person, and he's clearly gay. What about Blair White? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Just being trans and or gay doesn't, like, it's not mutually exclusive from being on the right, especially in the Zoomer generation. Like, this is just regardless of the fact we don't even have proof that these two were in a relationship.
Absolutely.
Even Discord has come out and said, and I'm sorry, everyone, I do trust the CEO of Discord more than I trust the FBI at this point, came out and said there is no proof, nothing that he communicated on Discord about killing Charlie Kirk, planned it, talked about violence in politics or anything. None of the sort. Nothing. Nothing.
And isn't it amazing that they pick this again, this hot button issue that's been at the forefront of the culture wars for the past few years, and they put it front and center again? Very convenient.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not saying true or false. I'm just saying very convenient. I got to be, as a student of philosophy and political science and history, I got to sit back and say, whoa, what's going on here? What's happening and who stands to benefit from this? Because
Thank
this
you.
Narrative has already been pushed a lot. We had book bans. We had school fights. We had the superintendents going and firing teachers and teachers doing this and students protesting here and there. We had people calling for, firing people who did, this trans reading groups that they had, these library reading groups where, like, you know, people would talk about sexuality and things like that. I'm just saying that this is the hot button issue of our time. And it just so happens that the shooter was living with the trans person that they were romantically involved in. I don't know.
Meanwhile, the kid's not even, we don't even know that the kid is trans. He's wearing a Snuggie, like he looks like more like a furry than a trans person. And then these people think that, like, these boomers and Gen Xers and even some of the millennials are like, oh, this left and right binary. Was he on the left or was he on the right? That is not a thing anymore, especially in the Zoomer generation. These kids are immersed in memes and political ideology. And, like, they're saying, oh, he wrote, if you're gay, if you read this, that's leftist. No, it's not. That's just a meme thing.
Because some people in the chat are saying it, and I want to just make this clear. When Kennedy was assassinated, the person they blamed it on was Lee Harvey Oswald. And they said that Lee Harvey Oswald had been campaigning for Cuba, had been a communist, had defected to the Soviet Union, and then magically came back to the U.S. without any issues, no detention, no nothing, no anything, and got money and was hooked up again with the job after defecting to the Soviet Union in the 60s. In the 60s. I mean, this is not like, you know, now to the Russian Federation. We're talking about after peak McCarthyism. And they did the same thing. Oh, he had all this pro-Cuban stuff. He was a communist sympathizer. The Soviet Union stood to gain. When in reality, we now know the Soviet Union stood to lose a lot and did lose a lot because Kennedy was actually pushing for peace, an end to the Cold War. I'll smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He was back-channeling to Fidel Castro. He actually was trying to do what they in power, these power elites, didn't want him to do. And so the Soviet actually lost and Cuba lost, and actually Fidel mourned his loss. I'm just saying that it's very convenient that we got slogans all over and things like that. It just fits a nice package narrative and it just is suspect. I'm not saying it's right or wrong or it's true or false. I'm simply saying I've seen this before in history as a person who's a critical thinker, I got to ask myself, what's the bigger story here?
Right. And it almost becomes a Lady Macbeth situation because the media has ran with it and created a total martyr narrative. like, it's sheer lunacy. Charlie Kirk, who absolutely abhorred Martin Luther King, is over here in an AI slop photo that freakish representative Anna Paulina Luna creates and puts him in between MLK and Jesus himself. Now, let me also say, two nights ago, I'm running a space and they say, someone comes in and says, can you find a better example of Jesus Christ on earth than Charlie Kirk? That's where we're at. And then this morning, I posted it in our group chat. Gunther, who is another lunatic, is saying, who went to church for Charlie today? What the fuck are we doing? What the fuck?
It's mind melt at this point. I mean, think about how quickly he became a martyr figure, and it was all like packaged. And you know, it reminds me of that scene in Jurassic Park where, you know, Dr. Malcolm is like, you package it and you stamp it, and then everybody's buying it here or there. It was that fast. Nobody knew what was happening, and already it was, you know, AI videos and with Martin Luther King, and Jesus is hugging him, and everybody's hugging each other, and Charlie Kirk's hugging Irina. And it's just like, wait a second. It's just, what's going on? You know, what's happening? By the way, I just want to clear the air. Somebody in the chat said, I do not think Lee Harvey Oswald was the shooter. I do not. And I think the FBI also noted that nobody could have gotten off that many shots with that type of rifle. And they themselves proved that through the investigation. So just to throw it out there, I do not believe the official narrative. I don't believe the official narratives on a lot of things. So just so.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
That we're clear about that. That's why we're here.
So, and obviously with this nicely packaged narrative, and keep in mind, Jerusalem Post was the first newspaper to break the story, and Bibi was the first leader to express his condolences. But regardless, MAGA declares war. Probably can't really read all of these, but this is war, is some of them, right? So now we go from this is war, you've killed our martyr, you've killed our Christ-like figure, and then Trump comes forth.
Years that followed, America's warriors avenged our fallen and sent an unmistakable message to every enemy around the world. If you attack the United States of America, we will hunt you down and we will find you. Go all over this sometimes magnificent earth. We will crush you without mercy and we will triumph without question. That's why we named the former Department of Defense the Department of War. It will be different.
And also,
not really. I'm really concerned for our country. We have a great country. We have a radical left group of lunatics out there, just absolute lunatics. And we're going to get that problem solved. I'm only concerned for the country. Yeah.
Mr. President, how do you want to see your supporters respond to this? Charlie Kirk was a big advocate of nonviolence and free speech on campus. How do you want your supporters to respond, sir?
I think that way. He was an advocate of nonviolence. That's the way I'd like to see people respond.
We go further because we're not done using Charlie Kirk's legacy to push our own political agendas. Of course, here comes Elon Musk. The left is the party of murder. We still don't know if this kid's a leftist or not. We do not. Not a single clue. The left is the party of murder. We're moving on. Next comes Tulsi.
There's a common characteristic between Charlie Kirk's assassin and the Islamist terrorists, Al-Qaeda, who attacked us on 9/11, in that they both sought to silence those who they did not agree with. They both recognize that their ideologies, their views would not stand up to being challenged. And yesterday, sadly, what we saw in this shooter was using violence in order to take away Charlie Kirk's voice and take away his ability to continue to inspire in such an incredibly positive way others to exercise our God-given rights to free speech. These people are fanatics. In Al-Qaeda, these Islamist terrorists, they are so-called religious fanatics. Yesterday, Charlie's assassin is a political fanatic. But
so now the death of Charlie Kirk is our new 9/11. We're not done yet. Here comes Border Patrol Barbie.
Local leaders and try to help what he can do to make it better for their kids growing up there. In fact, the last thing Charlie had texted me about the, a day or two before he passed away was about those mayors and governors, that he wanted them to be held accountable for how dangerous they were making the situation for their people.
Charlie's last dying wish was to hold mayors and governors accountable. Wait, there's more.
And let me tell you something I'd not share with anybody, but the last message that Charlie Kirk gave to me before he joined his creator in heaven was he said that we have to dismantle and take on the radical left organizations in this country that are fomenting violence. That was the last message that he sent me before that assassin stole him from all of us. And we are going to do that under President Trump's leadership. I don't care how, it could be a RICO charge, a conspiracy charge, conspiracy against the United States, insurrection, but we are going to do what it takes to dismantle the organizations and the entities that are fomenting riots, that are doxing, that are trying to inspire terrorism, and that are committing acts of wanton violence. It has to stop. And my message is to all of the domestic terrorists in this country spreading this evil hate, you want us to live in fear? We will not live in fear, but you will live in exile, because the power of law enforcement under President Trump's leadership will be used to find you, will be used to take away your money, take away your power, and if you've broken the law, to take away your freedom, Sean.
He had a lot of last wishes that seemed to coincide with psychotic domestic policy that weirdos in the Trump administration want to push. This is interesting. Why wasn't he in the Trump administration?
Hey, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Come on. This is Patriot Act 2.0. This is, as you know, Christians 9:10. This is all of that packaged. It's perfect. It's perfect. How can I not ask questions when I see stuff like this? How can I not? How can we not? You know?
And then he has the audacity to mention the doxing.
Well, first, these people are the ones who were crying for the past couple of years about cancel culture and, oh my God, and they're coming after us and the wokes and everything after, you know, January 6th, right? J6. And now all of a sudden, here we are, the perfect moment. And they strike because they were into it. They were into it. They wanted this moment for them and they got it. Not only that, we're going to get even, I'm sure we're going to report on it, but there's even further stuff that's been mentioned.
Oh, about, yeah, we're going to do it.
You know, we are really in a moment where everyone is willing to once again give up their freedoms for security, give up their freedoms for a little bit more security. And you know what? Gore Vidal was right. We are the United States of amnesia. We are. We have no historical memory. We have everything is memory hold and disappears from our perspective on history. And thank God I'm from the Middle East and I got thousands of years of history. And I know how this stuff works. And you do too. And when we understand that, people say, oh, conspiracy theorists. No, because a lot of people lied to me because I fought in the Middle East. I saw it all up close and personal. Well, they were saying one thing in Washington and in New York. There was a completely different reality in Damascus and in Baghdad, right? We saw it. We talked to people. We saw the evidence. They said, oh, no, weapons of mass destruction, there were none. They said, oh, no, there was no phosphorus used on this civilian center. Everybody's burned and charred. Oh, no, we didn't use depleted uranium and plutonium. Half the births are all defects and things like that. I'm just saying it's good to ask questions. As a teacher and a former professor, that's what I want. I want everyone to ask questions.
Seriously. And I also want to continue on while prefacing that Chris and I were both doxed, harassed, tortured, not tortured in the legal sense, but harassed to the point of insanity, frisked, detained all at the borders, whatever, what have you, raided by the FBI myself, visited by them multiple times under the left while the left held power. So do not accuse us of pushing, espousing rhetoric or propaganda for the Democrats, because we suffered more under them than now. But we criticize the people holding power. So that's literally what we're doing. Why would we sit here and talk about Democrats when they hold zero power, period? None. They hold no power. Anyway, continuing on who incited who, now we have the mass firing. So it's crazy that Stephen Miller starts talking about people doxing. They start getting people fired. Now, I'd like your opinion on this. I am 100, as someone who was doxed, fired, life ruined, etc., over this kind of thing, I am completely against this. I want to get your thoughts. There is now a database with 20,000, of growing, it has to be much bigger now, 20,000 names on it with their info, where they work, their docs completely, of people that either made fun of or expressed happiness at Charlie Kirk's death. Why are we doing Palantir's job for them?
No, it's not even doing Palantir's job. This is exactly what happened in, for example, Nazi Germany. Everybody just is like, oh yeah, I'll start turning in my neighbor. He's hiding a Jew. They're hiding a gay. This one's a communist. That one's a trade unionist. That one's a socialist. That one has a Book of Marx. This is what they want. They want to turn everybody. If the greatest power for revolutionary transformation and change is a collective, is unity, is struggle as one group, then it's very easy to divide everybody against one another, right? And this is exactly what's happening at this point. Divide and conquer, you name it. So this doxing that you've seen, which, by the way, is the same playbook as the Canary Mission and all of the doxing that's happened for pro-Palestine voices. I was at the forefront of this, right? Because I went to Sayyid Hassan's funeral and in Lebanon. I went to Yemen. I went to Iraq. I went to these places, and what ended up happening? The Zionists put so much pressure on my school where I was teaching. And I left. Okay. I had to go because there was this enormous pressure on me there. What I'm saying is that they don't, for all of the bullshit that they talk about, we want a marketplace of ideas, we want robust debate, and we want robust dialogue, they don't want any of that. They want their agenda and only their agenda. And if you don't conform to it, they're going to push it through. When they're in power, it's only what they say. When they're out of power, it's gaslighting. Oh, we just want to have a voice. And once they come, they're going to take away every other voice. That's the real problem.
Yep. We're talking about both sides, please. So remember this tweet, because I responded to it. If you were unfairly treated by your employer due to posting or liking something on this platform, we will fund your legal bill. I actually asked to be funded, but I never got a response. This was back in 2023, and now we have today, trying to get people fired. Trying to get people fired from Blizzard. How we just have no principles.
None.
And it's wild that we have a South African immigrant who has sucked off the teat of our government for however many decades, trying to sow division, not only here, but across the pond too. I've talked to many Europeans who are disgusted at Elon's behavior in their domestic politics. Let's talk about that for a second. So we have Elon Musk makes his guest appearance at a TPUK anti-Muslim march or March for Britain or something. I don't know. Sponsored by TPUK. Of course, it becomes about Charlie Kirk, but here we go.
Violence is going to come to you. You will have no choice. You're in a fundamental situation here whether you choose violence or not, violence is coming to you. You either fight back or you die. You either fight back or you die. And that's the truth.
Today, Elon, I think the British public are telling the world that they're ready to fight back.
Good. Yes.
Come on, Great Britain. No!
Fight back or die. This comes about a week after Andrew Tate tweets, civil war.
I'm, You know, it's shocking to me. Listen, they are pushing a narrative that's not only sowing division, people are going to start to die. People are already dying as a result of it. I mean, we have an ongoing genocide since October 7th. We have an ongoing genocide. We have multiple countries being bombed by a U.S.-supported terrorist entity. And these people are saying we're at war? No. This, the United States and the UK, this Western alliance launched the war. They're the ones that launched it. They're the ones that wanted blood and plundered the entire Muslim world and the entire global South. And now all of a sudden they're complaining? They're complaining why? Because Elon Musk's family got rich off of the backs of black South Africans, mining day after day, probably kids in those mines for the emeralds and whatever other precious stones that they were after. I'm just saying that this is exactly playing into the handbook of those entities, people, power structures that want to see a situation develop where there is more instability and chaos and violence, and they can seize on that to enact even more surveillance, more draconian legislation, more legal architecture to control the population and to control narratives. You can't, for example, have a job if you support BDS. Why? It's the freedom of speech. I can support any boycott I want. People boycott voting. I'm just saying that this is a very dangerous moment. And I'm afraid that this is once again, not only 9/11, not only a Reichstag, this is a axial moment for the US and other Western countries. And I think that it's going to play out in very dark ways before it gets any better.
I agree. Speaking of dark ways, I want your reaction to this.
The evildoers responsible for my husband's assassination have no idea what they have done. They killed Charlie because he preached a message of patriotism, faith, and of God's merciful love.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
But they should all know this. If you thought that my husband's mission was powerful before, you have no idea. You have no idea what you just have unleashed across this entire country and this world. You have no idea. You have no idea the fire that you have ignited within this wife. The cries of this widow will echo around the world like a battle cry.
Now, I some people said they were Catholics. I thought they were evangelicals, which would make more sense with the fire and brimstone sort of thing. So I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt because of that. Because, you know, Catholics, you know, Orthodox is a lot like Catholics. We don't really preach a lot of the vengeance sort of thing or evildoers, or I take, you know, this sort of wrath in my own hands. So trying to chalk it up to that.
Yikes. I mean, I mean, as somebody who graduated seminary and, you know, studied theology, I would have expected a conciliatory sort of, you know, message, one of, you know, peace, justice, you know, to preach what Christ was all about, all of these kinds of things. Instead, we go straight to a new crusade. We're back. Pope Urban, we're ready to go again, right? Deus Vult. I mean, that's what it feels like.
Right.
It feels the entire moment feels like we're launching a new crusade against Islamists and Marxists. Although it's interesting that the United States and Israel both fund and support an Islamo-Marxist party called the Mujahideen Khalq, which is a terrorist organization for Iran that's based in Albania. But that aside from
We fund we fund them, and
then we hang out with them. Giuliani's always with them. John Bolton, the whole gang. So I just find it very, very peculiar why at this point, instead of going down the message that might be more in line with Christ's teachings, we're going straight for I bring the sword and here we go.
I have another clip I want to get your. Now, this clip, I was watching this debate as Charlie was being shot. So this is kind of setting the juxtaposition of this. It's pretty incredible.
Pat, why did you call for Jackson Hinkle to be killed?
I didn't call for Jackson Hinkle. You fantasized about him being killed. I said it would be nice if he did.
Why did you call?
Because he's friends with enemies of the United States of America.
Should be killed if
No. He's friends and he's promoting false narratives such as yourself, and he's enemies.
Should I be
killed?
He's
friends and he's living and he's embedded with enemies of the United States of America.
Oh, really?
Enemies of the United States of America. He is a traitor. He is a traitor to the United States of America.
So should I? So you said you compared him to me. So should I be killed? I mean, everyone you don't like should be killed. This is who Israel puts up to defend.
No, this is not who Israel puts up. But nice job trying to like defame me. That man.
Now, let me just give you guys a little background. Matt Tardio has more than once said that he was very proud of unaliving Iraqi children while he was in the army. He has also been beaten by his wife and cried about it online. That's just an aside. And he is also contracted by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation to run interference for them and whitewash their crimes in Gaza. How do you react to him calling for the assassination of Jackson Hinkle for having friends that he doesn't like, all while the right is crying about people saying they're happy over Charlie Kirk's assassination?
Listen, I mean, Jackson is one of my best friends, is a brother of mine. And for me, I think that, you know, by extension, he wants our murder as well. We were with him in Iraq. I was with him in Yemen. I was with him in Lebanon. I'm here with him in Moscow. And I just think that this is exactly what they want. They want us to be killed simply for speaking truth to power, simply for and you don't have to agree with us on everything, and I don't agree with Jackson on some things, but the main thing is this: Jackson has every right as an American citizen under the First Amendment to do what he does. He would have to prove that Jackson is somehow a traitor and committing treason against the United States. He has no evidence. Simply for voicing an alternative perspective, they want to silence those voices by killing them. Isn't that exactly what they're saying about this so-called shooter? It's just mind blowing. My mind is absolutely melted from these people and their inconsistency, ideological inconsistency, never mind their religious inconsistency and everything else. So I think that it's very dangerous. I think that calling for the murder of somebody that you politically disagree with is extremely dangerous. Very dangerous.
Extremely dangerous. And I do want to make a note. I posted this a little bit ago. I'm always a boomer with this. I apologize, guys, when I share my screen. Here we go. I've got it. So here is Peter Turchin, who is the book that I recommended at the beginning of the episode. If you were here at the time, this is from his Substack. According to him, America's current assassination rate has exceeded the 1960s peak and is approaching civil war levels. From 2022 to 2024, 7 assassinations have occurred, including attacks on politicians, etc. Turchin argues that assassinations and terrorism are canaries in the coal mine, warning of structural breakdown, the immiseration of ordinary people, overproduction of frustrated elites, and widening inequality. These conditions drive both lone assassins and organized radicals, signaling that the U.S. system remains dangerously unstable. I think that that's pretty interesting that we're approaching those levels, and people say, oh, it's just one side. No, it's both. There was an assassination of 2 Democratic lawmakers over the summer. We're just rising in political violence.
I mean, this is really, I've said it before, and I've actually said it for the past few years. I mentioned it first time in 2020. I think that the United States is entering its period of, you know, its years of lead. I think that this strategy of tension that was pursued by the CIA and other covert intelligence entities during the Cold War is absolutely being utilized domestically. I think that this serves a lot of powerful interests, especially as we have looming contradictory crises that are coming up We have an economic crisis. We have wealth inequality. We have a failing infrastructure. We have a failing welfare state. We have all of these things slowly bubbling and boiling. And how convenient that now, in order to stop us talking about Epstein, the deep state, war, poverty, inequality, healthcare, how convenient to talk about, I hate you for this position, I hate you for that position. And not only do I hate you, we're going to start killing each other over it. You see, it serves a bigger purpose. I'm just saying, you don't have to be a rocket science or a conspiracy theorist to understand that basic arithmetic.
All right, let me get Marco Rubio out of the way again before we move on to a little bit more meat and potatoes before we end, because I know you have a hard stop. So we've had, while the Charlie Kirk assassination and fallout has occurred, that day of the assassination, 3 to 5 hours, we're getting a timeline difference, but 3 to 5 hours after the assassination, the Republicans voted to block the release of the Epstein files. Their new reasoning is that, I don't want to get too deep into the Epstein files, but their new reasoning is that the files have changed. The Democrats altered the files. So if we release them now, they'll be the version the Democrats want out. Then we had the bill you mentioned of making BDS, a politically motivated BDS, illegal. Then we had this law mentioned. Brian Nast is putting a law up front. Bill would grant Secretary of State Marco Rubio the power to revoke passports of U.S. citizens in the same way he has revoked the green cards and visas of foreign nationals in the U.S. for criticizing Israel and the U.S. But then what was Rubio up to?
By way of greeting an extraordinary friend of Israel, Secretary of State of the United States, Marco Rubio, and his wife, Janet. I think his visit here is a testament to the durability, the strength of the Israeli-American alliance. It's as strong and as durable as the stones of the Western world that we just touched. Under President Trump and Secretary Rubio and their entire team, this alliance has never been stronger. And we deeply appreciate it, not only on behalf of the people of Israel, but today, the generations of Jews who preceded us, and hope that we build our state in you. Thank you.
Our Secretary of State is in Israel. After they bombed our ally, our country is on the brink of civil unrest at minimum, if not civil war. And he's over there. Why?
Our country has an entire naval, you know, blockade basically of Venezuela now too. It's insane. It's insane. Not only that, I posted about this. Isn't it interesting how every time these so-called Christians go to Jerusalem, the first place they go is to the Western Wall, which Wailing Wall, okay, part of the Temple Mount, but actually many have claimed it's actually part of the Fortress of Antonia, yeah. Right? The Roman fortress that was there that overlooked the...
I'm fine with them continuing to pray to Italians if that's what they want to do.
That architecture, the wall stood, that's because the Romans built it, right? But, you know, it's interesting that they don't go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It's always an afterthought. And that's the church for, that's, you know, primarily the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate. Also, the Catholics have a part, the Armenians, the Ethiopians, the Copts. I'm just saying, it's very fascinating that instead of kissing the stone where Jesus was washed and prepared by Joseph of Arimathea and everything like that, they kiss this wall, random wall. Not even the wall of the temple. An outside wall. A wall of a fortress, most likely. I'm just saying, this is very strange to me. And all right, I don't know.
We're going to dive into a little bit of the conspiracy theory, not too much, but let's just go through it a little bit.
They go, you know, they have no limits. When you hate Jews, when you hate the Jewish state, you're willing to say anything and promote all these absurd rumors. And by the way, they're willing to kill us all the time. I mean, that's what they're doing. And you know, over the centuries, when Jews, especially in the Middle Ages, the horrific Middle Ages, the worst things were said about Jews you couldn't possibly believe. We were poisoning the wells. We were drinking the blood of Christian children. You name it. I mean, these things. That continued, actually, up to the Holocaust. The Nazis said the same thing. You know, we're carrying vermin. We're spreading disease. And people believed it. And every time they believed it, this was a prelude to a greater and greater massacre, culminating with the worst massacre of them all, the Holocaust. Well, since then, we've learned, A, when people spread these lies about us, prepare yourself for the assault.
So that's that. And then we're gonna hang out with Max Blumenthal a little bit before you have to go. So 1 second.
Does the president of the United States fear for his life?
Yes. Yes, I mean, obviously he fears for his life. And I was told that he feared for his life before the two assassination attempts, one coming within a millimeter of striking his head. I mean, let's not forget about that.
But I mean, just to clarify, he doesn't fear for his life because of Ireland.
I mean, I've been told, yes, that Israel is a major source of concern for Trump. I mean, think about it. What would happen?
This is our ally.
If he suspended arms if he suspended arms to a country that carries out assassinations all across the globe, that specializes in assassinations, that has an entire wing of its intelligence services that conducts assassinations, including with household goods like pagers, would you not be scared? So yes, Trump is scared. And what I learned from this source, who is a Trump insider, someone who talks to who talks to people in the Oval Office, people close to Trump, is that during one of Netanyahu's many visits to the U.S. this year, some figures in his retinue, Israeli agents, placed electronic devices on emergency response Secret Service vehicles. The Secret Service found them and they reported this to the White House. You know, these would be emergency response vehicles that would respond to an incident potentially involving the president.
Interesting. Donald Trump is in fear of his life from Israel, being spied on by Israel. So, and this one's a little bit longer, so bear with me. I'll end it when we get the gist.
So Charlie Kirk has to answer to his own grassroots base, and you can hear he's starting to make some noises. He's talking about October 7th possibly being an inside job. Israel let it happen in order to carry out long-term political goals. He starts to question whether Jeffrey Epstein was an Israeli Mossad agent at a time when the Epstein files were becoming an uncomfortable issue for Trump. And it all blew out into the open at TPUSA's July Youth Summit in, I believe it was Tampa, Florida. Yeah. Might have been Tallahassee.
Yeah, Tucker gave the speech.
Right.
Right.
So Tucker gave a speech. I mean, that was the seminal moment. But it wasn't just Tucker. Megyn Kelly had started questioning Israel, and she's on stage calling Jeffrey Epstein a Mossad agent with Charlie. Comic Dave Smith, who, like myself, is a Jewish anti-Zionist, but he more comes from kind of the libertarian world. So he was welcomed on stage to debate a Zionist propagandist who works for Newsweek, Joshua Hammer. Debate, no, that's not something you want, especially at this point, if you are like a pro-Israel enforcer. And Dave Smith was openly talking about the slaughter of children in Gaza, and the crowd was cheering in this cathartic way. Then Tucker comes out, says, you should have your citizenship yanked if you fight for a foreign army. All right, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of American Jewish youth go to Israel and fight for their army instead of our own. So that's a direct blow to not just the Israel lobby, but like the whole concept of Jewish communal life as it's understood by its leadership. Then Tucker calls out Bill Ackman, who's one of the biggest Netanyahu money men inside the US, who's pulling strings at Harvard, getting their funding pulled unless they crack down on Palestine activism. And he questions Bill Ackman, he calls him a scam artist, and said, how did he make $9 billion? Like, where did it come from? I mean, and Bill Ackman, the next day, he couldn't really answer the question. He published like a 5,000-word meltdown Twitter post trying to defend his financial investments. It was
just bonkers. I'd never seen anything like it. And it was all Charlie Kirk's fault for sanctioning, for giving basically the people what they wanted. And after that, he started getting publicly attacked. Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin, the two biggest Zionist enforcers in the media who are very close to Netanyahu, biggest forces lobbying Trump to wage war on Iran, went off on TPUSA, said we can't be having a Big Ten if it includes kooks. Laura Loomer, we all know who she is. She publicly attacked Charlie Kirk and said he basically had to step down. He was getting attacked in pro-Israel media. What we didn't know, which I learned, is in private, the pressure was even more intense. He was being bombarded with text messages. And at some point, Netanyahu personally called him and offered to basically fund his organization to new levels that he never even imagined, which meant, you know, Zionist Israeli takeover, complete like recapture of TPUSA, an organization they basically helped create. And Charlie Kirk turned him down. Now, after Charlie Kirk was killed, we know that Netanyahu wouldn't stop posting about him. Like minutes after he was killed, when his body was still warm, Netanyahu was posting about him, interrupting his seven front war in the Middle East and his global assassination spree where he's trying to kill people even inside a U.S. ally in Qatar.
So interesting. So if Trump's afraid for his life, what does that say how other people would feel? I also found this today, interestingly enough. This is Governor Cox of Utah. This is from his site. Last year, I had the remarkable opportunity to lead a trade delegation to Israel. I toured holy places and prayed at the wall, of course. Our state has enjoyed a long and productive relationship with Israel. Utah and Israel have a long history of economic diplomatic relations. Total trade volume between Israel and Utah exceeded $170 million in 2022 alone. And in 2022, Charlie Kirk said this: Utah Governor Spencer Cox should be expelled from the Republican Party.
I mean, you gotta wonder. You gotta ask questions. That's how I feel about this. You know, we know. Listen, I want people to think about not only this situation siloed in this moment in history. We have the Epstein stuff. We have Ghislaine Maxwell and her father, Robert Maxwell. We have, never mind that, we have Mordechai Vanunu, who was honeypotted out of Italy after spilling the beans on Israel's nuclear secrets and remains a prisoner in Israel to this day. He can't leave. Mm-mm. He can't leave. He's a prisoner in that country. I'm just saying that there is something afoot. There's something going on. There's a lot of power and money involved. I mean, $170 million between Utah and Israel. What are they doing? What are Mormons. They? Mormons? They're just going over there. Tourism? I don't know.
The Mormons and Israelis are Mormons and Jews are close.
It just but makes
I do
want to
stress that I do want to stress that I don't believe that Charlie Kirk was making some weird pivot against Israel himself.
No, but he was supportive of the entire thing.
Right. He was supportive of the entire thing. But what I do want to stress is that Charlie Kirk and just streamers like him listen to their audience and oftentimes placate to their audience. So Charlie Kirk was obviously delivering something that his audience wanted. This comes after or during Bibi Netanyahu is petitioning the United States government for millions of dollars because the Zoomers are turning on Israel. The Zoomers are Charlie Kirk's main audience. If Charlie Kirk is catering to Zoomers that are turning their opinions against Israel, then Charlie Kirk may be seen as turning against Israel. It's very interesting. I don't believe, and people are saying I'm very skeptical. Same. I don't believe that he grew a soul or a conscience in regards to Israel or anything like that. He had been celebrating that or denying the starvation of Gazans and all of that leading up to it. But what I do say is that his message was starting to coincide with the ideas of his audience. And you can't have that at a time when Israel is saying we're losing the Zoomer opinion. We're losing the opinion of America. And they've just thrown a trench of $50 million at Google and YouTube to whitewash all of what's going on. It's just it's very interesting.
I also just want to say that you don't have to turn on somebody for them to kill you for political purposes. The Byzantine emperors killed their siblings. I mean, Empress, what was it? Empress Irene or Empress Theodora? I'm trying to remember which one. Killed her son.
Yeah.
Killed her son to take the throne, to keep the throne. The Ottoman emperors and sultans, they killed their siblings. I mean, you don't, it doesn't have to be like, oh, he turned on us and we got to kill him. No, no, you just need a martyr. Somebody convenient, you know? I mean, this was a common thing, by the way, in Daesh and in Al-Qaeda and things like that. Okay, Habibi, you take this car. It's loaded full of stuff. Go there and, you know, we're going to see you in Jannah. But you need a martyr. Somebody's got to do it. You do it, you know?
I know you have to go, so I'm going to give you some final thoughts. Maybe leave our audience with a good message about maybe what's going on. Chris, yeah, you want to take
me? I thought you were going to put something. Oh my God. I'm trying. I'm thinking now. I give
you a final thought so you can go, so you can take off.
I'm so, listen, I mean, this whole thing has rattled us all, I think. I think like you and I have been talking and many people have been talking just how sort of, I feel like my mind has exploded, like the meme when your mind goes to like, you know, Big Bang mode. You really have to wonder what's going on, what's happening. What is the agenda? I mean, I think we have grasped the agenda. The agenda is increased surveillance, increased militarization, increased techno-feudalism, whatever you want to call it, further power for the elites against those who are poor, oppressed, marginalized, you name it. I think that this is the end goal. The way to get there requires bloodletting. And this is part of that process. This is part of that journey. And as we saw with that graph, the more assassinations, the more it plays into that program and that sort of agenda. It does, because you can justify it then at that point. When thousands were killed on American soil, you could justify the Patriot Act and the most severe incursion into American civil liberties since the Civil War. And the Civil War was a moment where the government, even under Abraham Lincoln, for all of his good, was able to infringe on American civil liberties and habeas corpus to, you know, fight the war effort. I just think that we are once again in that position. And I think that we have to be vigilant. We have to be vigilant. Everyone in the United States has to be vigilant because what's coming is going to be much more, I would say it's going to be scary for sure. But I think it's going to also be in ways that we can't necessarily see openly. But they're going to be monitoring, and already our information is out there. Our information, our data is being harvested. And you can see people are targeting people simply for airing viewpoints they disagree with online. That is scary. It just is. And we have to be vigilant, and we have to always stand against that. And we have to stand up for the First Amendment, I think, because that's actually, you know, historically, the communists and all of these groups, we're the forefront of standing up for the First Amendment historically, because it was targeting them first. And so we do the same now as we did back then.
Right. I don't condone any of this targeting, harassment, and list making and purges. I mean, last I checked, you guys, the Americans always spread rumors that this is what went on under Mao and that we should avoid it at all costs. And yet here we are making lists of our neighbors and turning them over to the government. So it's pretty incredible.
It is. It is. We got to be vigilant against it for sure.
Well, Chris, for thank sure. you very much. And I'll let you get to your whatever hot date.
My next appointment.
Your next appointment. Maybe we'll have a breaking news this week. If not, we will see you on Sunday. Chris, thank you so much and enjoy Moscow.
Thank you so much. Good to see you all.
Good to see you.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody. Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.